So do you ever wonder how you can help take care of our Wisconsin lakes? Well, we're going to find out today. Jill Nadeau here in for Larry Mueller. And with me in the studio are Mike Ingelson. He's the Executive Director of Wisconsin Lakes. And Eric Olson, Lake Specialist and Director of the UW Extension Lakes Office. They'll tell us how we can protect and preserve our beautiful lakes. And we'll also be talking about World Water Day, how invasive species are affecting Wisconsin lakes, and this year's Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention. What questions do you have about lakes that are near you? How do you help protect Wisconsin lakes? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on our Facebook page. Look for the Larry Mueller Show. And how about put some photos of your favorite Wisconsin lakes up there? Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in. We really appreciate that.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. Now, Mike, why don't you start out and tell us a little bit about your organization, Wisconsin Lakes?
Sure. We are a couple of decades old now. I believe actually 25 years this year. We're the merger between the organization of lake associations and the organization of lake districts. So most of our members are lake organizations, but we definitely have a lake conservation bent. So our mission is to conserve, protect, and make sure that our lakes stay clean and healthy and help our member organizations get to that point with their own lake.
And if people wanted to know more about that, where would they go?
We have a website, of course, wisconsinlakes.org.
Okay.
So they can check us out there.
All right. And Eric, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Sure. So we complement in many ways what Wisconsin Lakes does as an organization, as well as what the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources does. We have a model in Wisconsin called the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership, which brings these three together, and each one trying to play off its strengths. Coming from UW Extension, then, our strengths are education and outreach and working with people to help them understand lake resources. So that could be everything from understanding lake ecology to understanding maybe how to organize with your neighbors to form those lake associations that then will go on and join Wisconsin Lakes and become more of an advocacy force. We also do really specific trainings. So through UW Extension, we help train people to be volunteers at boat landings. Those volunteers then will interact with boaters and help them understand what they need to do to help protect the lakes from invasive species. Or we'll train people both in the DNR as well as volunteers just to identify invasive species so that they know exactly what they're looking at in a lake, because the plants can sometimes be difficult to tell the difference between them.
I would imagine. That's got to be an invaluable source, is those volunteers, because you can't be everywhere.
Yeah, and that's really part of the partnership model. You mentioned earlier 15,000 lakes in the state of Wisconsin. We do not have the financial resources to care for those lakes using just the Department of Natural Resources or even county government. So we really count on volunteers. And what we've been really successful in finding is that the people who live around the lake or the people who have a personal connection to the lake, they really want to contribute. They want to figure out a way to step up and help take care of the lake. So the enthusiasm is there. The interest is there. What we provide is some training and some education to help make sure it's directed in the right way.
Right. And where can people find out about those opportunities? Is there a website or do they just go to their extension office?
It's a mixture of both.
Okay.
You know, if you Google UW Extension Lakes, you'll find that we don't have a really nice URL like wisconsinlakes.org. My office is actually situated at the UW Stevens Point campus right in the middle of the state. And so we have a webpage there where we archive all of our information. We disseminate a quarterly newsletter to people around the state. We have about 25,000 subscribers who get this quarterly newsletter that gives them a lot of updates about what's going on in terms of their lakes and different programs that they can plug into. So people can subscribe to that newsletter, actually. It's free. If you find our webpage and find you're going to be looking for our newsletter, it's called Lake Tides. And that's just one of the ways that we reach out to people.
Wonderful. Well, maybe Lexi will get a chance to put that on our Facebook page, links to both of your pages, and people won't have to search too hard. So we'll try to do that on our end. Today is World Water Day, and coincidentally, we have you here. Yep. I'd like to say we planned it, but we didn't. why don't you kind of tell us about what does that What is that, first of all? And why don't you go ahead, actually, Mike? Why don't you start with that? What does that mean to Wisconsin?
I think it's a day, and it's part of sort of a week-long celebration of water and realizing the importance of water to, obviously, to us as humans. And in Wisconsin, it's such a huge part of our economy, our culture. You know, the lakes and rivers and streams that we have are such a sort of built into the fabric of our history that so many people see the importance, both from an economic perspective and just a purely personal recreational perspective of wanting to protect and preserve those resources.
Okay. Is the extension do anything special on World Water Day? Besides, come here.
Not anything in particular, but I would point out Extension has a wide array of water programming. So lakes, if you'd imagine, it's just one little piece of that.
Sure.
We have a groundwater program that also happens to be based out of Stevens Point. We have the Geological and Natural History Survey, which also does a great deal of water research and sort of documenting the water resources. Wisconsin is also, I think, just blessed not only by the water resources we have, but by the investment that society has made in our waters. So World Water Day today, it points out that in a lot of developing nations, it's a much different scenario where people just don't know where to find potable water, or they just have limited access. And in our state, we've solved a lot of problems. We still have questions and problems to address. But for the most part, people in Wisconsin are it is healthy to drink your tap water. It is healthy to drink your city water. You don't kind of question things the way you might in other countries or other states.
Right. And one of the things you said, we have some problems, and one of those are invasive species. So let's talk a little bit about that. What are some of the biggest concerns about these little creatures in our lakes? Go ahead then, Mike.
Sure. I think there's a couple of things we talk about when we talk about invasive species. We talk about keeping them from being spread. So populations that have established themselves in lakes and keeping those populations from getting into new waters, and then new invaders coming in from outside the state. So in the last, what, year and a half, 2 years, Eric, we had a big new one called starry stonewort, which is a very small plant. That has gotten into southeastern Wisconsin, ranges from that to something like a zebra mussel that has been in the state for probably decades.
Right. So we have the invasive species rule. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what that is and what it means to people who live around the lake, use lakes?
Sure. So we have a number of species that have been listed by the government as invasive species, and those you're not allowed to transport. So you have to be careful about cleaning off your boats, your trailers, your waders if you've been fishing, all those sorts of things to make sure that stuff doesn't get out of that lake into a new one, or you don't take stuff back from another lake. And so as part of that, one of the programs that Extension helps run is called Clean Boats, Clean Waters, where we have volunteers that go out to boat landings and inform people about the law and about best practices to help them clean their equipment.
Right. It's because that's one of the main things. That's how they get here pretty much, right? Are there other ways that they get here?
Most of the problematic invasive species, it turns out, they really are human transported.
Okay.
There aren't a lot of examples, actually, of ducks or the wind moving these things around, because it turns out if that was the case, that probably would have happened a long time ago. For the most part, it does require this sort of artificial conveyance on a boat trailer. Unfortunately, we do have some instances where people actually intentionally move things around. Historically, we've done that a lot. 100 years ago, it was common practice to move carp into water bodies, and there was even I don't know if it was a lawmaker. It was someone 100 years ago. His name was Philo Hoy, and he bragged about how we were planting carp in so many lakes, and everyone's going to be so happy to have all these carp. And now we look around, we're like, we got to get rid of a lot of these carp. They're an ecological menace in the lakes that they're in, and it turns out that intentionally moving species around is just not a really great idea. And so part of the AIS rule, actually, too, is to identify species that currently aren't in Wisconsin, We don't want them in Wisconsin, and so we prohibit people from moving them into Wisconsin. And the challenge with lakes, I think, is that a lot of people think of like, oh, I'm going to buy this lakeshore home, and then I'm going to do some landscaping, so I'm going to plant some flowers here, and I'm just going to plunk these things in. And if they weren't aware that this species is prohibited, they plant an invasive species, it starts to modify the ecosystem all around the lake.
Absolutely. A couple of the ones that probably have been in the news a lot, the Asian carp and the round goby, which I'm not real familiar with round goby. Why don't you tell me what that is first, and let's talk about where they are in the state, if they're here.
Sure. Goby are mostly in the Great Lakes is where you're going to find them now.
Okay.
But the concern there is that they can move inland. So are they moving up, for example, the Fox River around Green Bay and trying to get into Lake Winnebago? And the challenge with these gobies is that they're just voracious eaters, and they love to eat things like other fish's eggs. So if you have fish who are trying to reproduce and they're trying to lay eggs around, then you get these gobies to come in and suck things up. That's going to modify the ecosystem. What we're really trying to do is limit their movement inland into other lakes. So they're swimming up. And then the kind of reverse situation with the Asian carp, we know they're in the Mississippi River Basin. We know that that basin is connected in some ways to the Great Lakes. We're really trying to prevent them from moving into the Great Lakes and also up into the St. Croix River Basin in western Wisconsin. So it seems like we're at war almost. You know, we're trying to fend off all these invaders. Some are coming in from the lakes, some are coming in from the rivers. It's a challenge.
Yeah, I would say that's an understatement, that it's a challenge. Oh my gosh. We've been talking with Mike Ingelson, who's the executive director of Wisconsin Lakes, and Eric Olson, who's the director of the UW Extension Lakes office. What concerns do you have about our lakes? We'd love you to join the conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. All of our lines are open. You can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Just look for The Larry Mueller Show. Coming up at 11:45 today, we're going to be talking about having chickens in your garden and how you can make them both happy. Hope you can stay with us for that. Right now, we're talking about the state of Wisconsin lakes, and we have a caller on the line. Let's go to Amy in Iola. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I was just wondering about something you just said. How is the Mississippi region connected to the Great Lakes region? Where?
Okay. I think, Mike, you're going to take that, or Eric?
I can take that.
Okay.
There's actually been a couple of kind of research projects to really document exactly what are the potential connections between these two huge water basins. The most obvious one, actually, right now is in Chicago, in the Chicago region. 150 years ago, folks in Chicago believed that they needed to connect to the Mississippi for shipping, because you could connect then boats and goods from the Great Lakes down to the Mississippi, down to New Orleans. So they reversed the flow of the Chicago River, which used to flow into Lake Michigan. Now it actually flows out of Lake Michigan, and so it eventually then kind of works its way downstream into the Mississippi Basin. So a lot of times when we're talking about Asian carp, we're talking about the battleground as being right in the city of Chicago, where these shipping canals still provide this direct pathway. And there's also sort of more of a theoretical pathway, but up where the St. Croix headwaters begins in northwestern Wisconsin, there's a sort of a hydrological divide between the Great Lakes Basin and the Mississippi Basin in Douglas County, where really in a conceivably very wet spring, you could actually have aquatic resources moving back and forth between the two basins. So it's the Brule River that flows into Lake Superior and the St. Croix flowing down into the Mississippi. So there's really those two places that we really pay attention to. The main one right now is really in that Chicago region.
How do you get a river to go the opposite direction? I just can't even...
You dig and dig. I've been reading recently the biography of Increase Lapham. He's a famous Wisconsinite. He cut his teeth basically helping to engineer canals in Ohio. And it was all the rage 150 years ago. Oh. Again, kind of like planting carp. People were doing these things because they thought it was just a great idea. And it certainly did help our country out, putting in these canals. But nobody asked them to put down on paper what the ecological downside might be. What would be the long-term consequences of putting in these canals? And now we're looking at them and saying, well, doesn't really balance out, but there still is active shipping taking place out of Chicago into the Mississippi Basin. So it's kind of, it's a challenge.
It sure is. Well, let's go back to the phones. Richard in Madison. Hi, Richard. What do you have for us?
Hi. I'm really concerned about the Little Plover River up in Portage County, which I used to even fish, and Lake Emily, of course, are running dry because of high-capacity wells. What can we do about that situation? That's not invasive. I mean, these are politicians that are the threat.
Well, gentlemen, go ahead, Mike.
Sure. Thanks for the call, Richard. And groundwater is certainly an issue that that our organization is aware of and concerned with and has done work on. The number of high-capacity wells in the central part of the state has most certainly increased by many multiples over the last decade. And I think the science is fairly well demonstrates that there is an impact on surface waters. And, of course, the question is, what do we do about that? I think many times what people don't realize is that there really is a connection between the amount of water in the aquifer and the amount of water that flows into the surface waters from that aquifer. And you have, there's a real battle going on, I guess, between the needs of agriculture to grow the crops that we want for the foods that we want and the property owners and citizens that enjoy using the lakes and streams for recreation. It's a sticky wicket, shall we say.
Yeah, a lot of more work is going to have to go into that, I'm sure. Let's go to Meg in Oconomowoc. Hi, Meg. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I'm calling from Oconomowoc, and I have a question about the Clean Boats Clean Water Program. And my questions are, how effective is the Clean Boats Clean Water Program, and how do you measure its efficacy? We, out here in Oconomowoc, we have some people that are interested in doing the Clean Boats, Clean Water program, and some people are saying that it's really not worthwhile, that it wouldn't really do anything. And I'm looking for some information to clarify one way or the other how this program is doing.
Eric, what do you have to say about that?
Sure. So, again, this is part of this partnership approach, having volunteers from lake associations plus training from UW Extension. And certainly we want to know, is this worth the investment as well of people's time and effort going into this? A couple of ways that we get at that. One of them is actually we work with a social scientist here in Madison. His name is Brett Shaw, and he's done some surveys of boaters to try to understand, you know, are their perceptions of invasive species and their understanding of their responsibilities as boaters, is that changing over time? Are they actually able to kind of, I don't want to say correctly answer the question, but are they taking those actions and are they aware of what they need to do? And the answer there is yes, that we are having a positive and the desirable effect on how boaters perceive themselves and how what their understanding is of their responsibility at boat landings, because this is an educational program. And then another way we measure this is actually looking at how the rate of aquatic invasive species transmission has changed. And it turns out in Wisconsin, it's not 100% attributable to Clean Boats, Clean Waters, but in the last 8 years, we actually have held steady the rate of new aquatic invasive species transmissions to other lakes, which is to say, yes, they are still moving from lake to lake. That is sort of expected, but they're not increasing the rate of spread, which is actually what you would get if you didn't do anything. If you said, well, we're not going to try, we're not going to have an aquatic invasive species effort, then you'd expect it actually to start multiplying even faster, an exponential rate of spread. But instead, it's basically leveled off. There are going to be things like Mike mentioned starry stonewort. That's a species that it's looking like it has actually existed in some of these lakes for a number of years, and we just weren't even aware of its presence. So you're going to hear things like, oh, look, starry stonewort is spreading from this lake to that lake because they just discovered it in another lake. We don't know exactly when that species, that plant, got into that lake. What we do know now is, since we discovered Starry Stonewort, we have done the reconnaissance on most of the publicly accessible lakes in southeast Wisconsin, and now we know which ones have it and which ones don't. I'd hate to say that, but the test of this will be, you know, does it spread from lake to lake, and can we look at lakes that have clean bowl, clean waters and say that they've effectively limited this plant from coming in, and those other lakes that haven't. So two things again, the attitude and the actions of boaters is evidence that this is working, and then the rate of spread kind of being headed off and not growing, that's another thing we use to indicate this.
Now, on your website, or do you have access to information about what lake has, if they have any invasive species in them? I mean, can people find that out?
It's a little bit tricky because it's really the DNR that maintains those databases.
Okay.
And so they have what we call the lake pages. So every lake you want to go to, say a lake in Oconomowoc, Lac La Belle, and you look up their lake page, you'll be able to see what do we know is present in that lake and what isn't in that lake. And you'll see things about water quality there as well. You'll find out if there's a lake association or a lake district. So we really try to send people to the DNR web pages because that's sort of the clearinghouse for a whole bunch of information about lakes.
Yeah, that's invaluable. I'm sure people are going to be checking that out. So
yes.
I'm sure just a little, you know, search on
maybe
the internet.
We could share it on the Facebook page too, just the URL for the DNR lake pages.
Okay.
They're a tremendous resource, and it's another part, one of those huge investments that we made over the decades to build up this database.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have computers and the internet, we might as well start sharing that database.
Definitely. Well, Lexi, if you have a chance, why don't we get that one on there too? Let's go next to Terry in Mercer. Hi, Terry. What's on your mind?
Well, it's interesting to hear this topic today. We just had a forum for our town board here in Mercer last night, and one of the questions from the audience was if they had any concerns about the recent changes in shoreland zoning rules for the state. And all the town board people said they were really concerned about the lot size limitations. You know, now we have to have small lot sizes if there's new changes to developments. I'm wondering if the group has any creative solutions to help preserve the shorelines, because when those lot sizes get small down to the 100 foot or less, which is, you know, what's required now, you end up with more phosphorus, more runoff, and I'm wondering if the lakes folks there have any suggestions for local municipalities and counties on how to counteract some of that.
Well, Mike, I'll bet you do.
We do. To a point, at least. So for a little background for the listeners, what Terry is talking about, in the last state budget, the ability for counties to have ordinances with standards for shoreland zoning stronger than what the state minimum standards are was eliminated. So that basically the state now has one set of standards for shoreland zoning, which is zoning laws that control what happens on the near shore and in the immediate footprint of the water. So it's things like buffers, how much surface area you have to have that will let water penetrate instead of running off into the lake. And that's all important because it impacts water quality. This more stuff that runs off from the shore into the water can damage the water quality, and that can cause all sorts of problems with the lake, and can has been shown in some studies to drive down property values even. So it's an important question. One of the parts of shoreland zoning was whether and how wide a lot could be, how big a lot could be on the lakeshore. And many, especially in many northern counties, but not exclusively, there were ordinances that allowed for only larger lots, so 200 minimum foot width or even more than that. Now that's all down to 100, so there's concern that there's going to be some subdivision going. There has been some talk that there are there might be some creative ways to use subdivision law, create subdivision ordinances that will help with that somewhat. I don't know of any county that's actually done that and tried that, but that's certainly something that counties can look at. And one thing that we've been working on overall is continuing to work on the education of landowners to understand why this is important try to incite people to choose not to subdivide their property, to understand that subdividing the property can actually end up resulting in a lowering of property values and a problems in lake quality overall.
Okay. Our guests today are Mike Ingelson, Executive Director of Wisconsin Lakes, and Eric Olson, Director of the UW Extension Lakes Office. What do you do to take care of the lakes in your area? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we had an email from Jerry, and she said that they have approached they were approached by a volunteer about checking and washing their kayaks after every excursion for invasive species. They now spray their lakes down with, I'm thinking maybe
their
boats, yeah, down with a bleach water solution and after each use to prevent the spread of these species. Is that a good idea to do that?
There certainly is you want to be careful when you're moving a boat or a canoe or a kayak from one water body to another. And in fact, trout anglers know that just moving your boots from one stream to another stream can cause a problem, because now we have a species called New Zealand mud snail that can just be kind of in the grooves of your boot, and you would accidentally be moving it from one watershed to another. So we do recommend people take precautions. If you're going to use something like a bleach solution, be careful. Obviously know that a little bit of bleach goes a long way.
It sure does.
And you don't want to be doing that right down by the water. You want to be somewhere else, and you want to try to limit how much of that you use. The DNR has actually, in response to all these things, they've developed something called it's a protocol for anybody to use when they're moving a boat from one water body to the next. And of course the DNR wants to do this because they recognized, hey, we're the ones moving a lot of boats around.
Right.
We do fishery surveys and all these other things where we're out there moving boats around. We have to have our own protocol to make sure that we're not part of the problem. So that protocol, if you looked it up, struggling to remember the exact term for it. It's not a sanitation protocol, but it's similar to that. It's a Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Aquatic Invasive Species Protocol, and I think you'll find that there's guidance there to help you be a part of the solution as well.
And help not get those invasive species through. So what you can do personally, right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, you know what? Before we go back to the phones, you've got this convention coming up. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it, Mike?
Sure. I'm blanking on the dates. It's April 5th to the 7th, right?
It is.
You think that would be one of the things I'd remember,
right? And you're the executive
right?
director.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't worry, Eric. I'll be out there on the right day.
Okay.
So it's April 5th to the 7th in Stevens Point at the Holiday Inn Convention Center. It's the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention. This is our 39th year of putting this thing on. It started with humble beginnings and has evolved into this really incredible three-day event that brings together citizens, DNR staff, county staff, academics, people really from all over the state and the Midwest to learn about lakes, lake care, lake policy, lake culture. And Eric has done a really incredible job of bringing in some great keynotes in the last couple of years, and this year's especially is great. I'm going to let him talk a little bit about that, if that's all right.
Yep, go right ahead.
Yeah, we have a couple of keynote speakers. One of them, his name is Wallace J. Nichols, and he wrote this book just a couple of years ago called Blue Mind. And if you find out more about Wallace J. Nichols and Blue Mind, you'll see that he's delving into what's now like the neuroscience of how being on water bodies or being around water affects us. It can affect our mental health. It can affect our physical health. And it's just the fact that we're near water. There's just a whole emerging set of research about this, because people are finding out that just being around water bodies can actually make you more calm. It can help you deal with depression. It can do a lot of things. And so we've never really talked about these benefits that we get from water resources. And another keynote speaker then on Friday is a guy named Andrew Fusick-Peters. And he's an author and a photographer, but he suffered a pretty serious bout of depression. And he found that just by going out and kind of making a point of swimming just about every day, going out into a pond or a river in rural England and swimming, really helped turn him around and as far as his depression goes. And then because he's a writer, he wrote a memoir about this, and the book is called Dip. And his book, Dip, just kind of chronicles this experience and what it was like for him. So for us, these are really just two stalwart examples of how water really benefits us, sometimes in ways that we may not even appreciate or understand. So it's really important to bring that into the conversation when we talk about why should we bother trying to protect them or restore waterways.
There's lots of different reasons. And if people want to know more about it, where do they go?
They can Google Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention. That's a good way. Just search on that. We have a link on our website at wisconsinlakes.org, and the UW Extension page has a link as well.
Okay, great. Well, I think a lot of people are going to want to go to that. That sounds fun, actually.
One of the things I really love about convention is that it's not just about what's wrong. It's about ways that we can experience our both our lakes and our waters in general in really positive ways, and it's just a very great, uplifting experience every year.
Well, thanks for sharing that info with us, and let's go back to the phone. Scott in Eau Claire, what do you have for us?
Hi, good afternoon, sir. Morning, rather. But anyways, I just wanted a couple of things quick. One about Eurasian milfoil, another on the goby. With the milfoil, I'm in from Eau Claire, and we have the milfoil in certain lakes around here. And every year I see it again at a sports show again, and I see people on their docks all the time, tournament angler also, so I go around to a lot of different lakes, and I see people using those weed, they call them weed razors or something. You throw it on a rope and you pull it back, people cleaning the weeds around their docks. I just, they work great, but I would highly recommend people know what kind of weed they have. If they have milfoil and they cut that milfoil, and I see it when they cut it, it comes floating up and then the wind carries it, it's going to eventually sink and that stuff will re-root itself. So they think, you know, people think they're trying to clear their dock and they're doing a great job, but really they're, you know, creating more of a problem, I think, in the long run, and not that they're doing it intentionally, it's just they haven't, you know, been educated about it. And also on the goby, those little buggers are terrible things, but as a side note, trying to take something good away from a negative, I think that it has had a good impact on the smallmouth bass fishery. If you look around the Green Bay area, and there's the smallmouth bass fishery is probably the best it's ever been. It is, you know, touted by many professional anglers and magazines as the go-to destination now for.
Okay, well, thanks, Scott. We're getting a little interference there, but what's your response to that, Eric?
So a couple of things. On the invasive species clearing out your pathway, what we have in Wisconsin, you know, all the lakes, this is kind of important, I think, to convey, that all the lakes in Wisconsin are actually owned by the public. We all own them in common. They're called a public trust. And we hire the DNR, basically, to help us take care of them, but they belong to all of us. When you're a shoreland property owner, you actually get some extra bonus rights that come with owning property on a lake. And one of them is that you get the ability to clear a pathway to get in and out of your pier. So what he's describing is basically people recognizing that if they have Eurasian water milfoil or even a native plant that's sort of grown uncontrollably and it prevents them from getting a boat in and out, they actually have the right to do some clearing there to maintain a pathway. They can't just nuke everything. But they can clear that pathway. And you're right that they do have to be careful about what happens with that plant material. And in the case of milfoil, it will reroot from little fragments. So we do try to encourage people to limit that. In fact, there's actually been just a burgeoning industry in the last couple of years of people who actually hire folks who go underwater. They dive. They're on usually a diver-assisted oxygen system. They can spend hours underwater just hand-pulling these plants and then putting them into a suction system like a vacuum cleaner that sucks them up and takes them away. And that's the one way you can really prevent the fragments from coming back to haunt you later on. We, you know, 10 years ago, nobody was doing this, and now we see more and more groups taking on what we call diver-assisted suction harvesting, or DASH.
Wow, that's quite a name.
And as far as the Great Lakes go, Dan Egan is a journalist for the Milwaukee Journal, and he just published a book about sort of all the problems of the Great Lakes, and the relationship between gobies and bass are just going to be one piece of like this highly manipulated, highly modified, ginormous lake that will present no shortage of issues and problems, I think, for decades to come.
Okay. Well, let's go to Helen in Little Chute. Hi, Helen.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for this very, very important topic. To me, there's just not enough publicity about what's happening to our beautiful inland lakes and the Great Lakes. I had read the book Blue Mind. I highly recommend that book. I'm going to make every effort to get to Stephen's Point for that conference, April 5th through the 7th. I also would like to direct your attention to the book Pandora's Locks, The Opening of the Great Lakes, and the Invasive Species that Came in Through the Ballast Water. In that book, at the end of Pandora's Locks, Jeff Alexander, the author, talks about how invasive species attached themselves to recreational boats, and they actually got as far as California. I was telling the gal that interviewed me, you know, I'm 68 years old and I'm a college graduate, and I just didn't hear a lot about this in the past, and so we need more programs like this to raise awareness and also try to get out into the schools to get into the elementary schools to get the kids aware of that. So I think, you know, I love the idea of the volunteers that you have established checking, you know, private boats. But maybe if we could get into the schools to make the school kids aware of this, because it's a very important topic. So I just wanted to thank you folks for bringing this to the attention of the public.
Well, thank you, Helen. That's a perfect tie-up for, I think, at the end of this little talk we've had. Just, you know, one couple sentences, guys. What do you think people need to remember about our lakes? Why don't you go ahead, Eric, first?
I think, again, pointing out that they belong to the public, and so the public as a whole also has a responsibility. I mentioned before the shoreline property owners get these extra rights. They also have extra responsibilities, so we got to help them understand what that is.
Mike?
And playing off of that, I think the fact that they're connected. They're connected to our rivers and streams. They're connected to our groundwater and the people that use them. We all use them, and so we all have a responsibility to help take care of them.
And we're all connected. So with that, thank you, Eric and Mike, for joining us today. We appreciate your coming in. Good luck with your conference. Coming up next, we're changing topics a little bit. We're going to talk about how you can successfully keep chickens in your garden. So stay with us on the Ideas Network. There's a lot more to come.